When Professor Ballard mentioned to me that he was writing a novel about a black cavalry unit in the Civil War, I asked him if I could read it. I was curious as to what sort of story Professor Ballard could imagine. What I found was a gripping saga that added several pieces to my understanding of the very complicated issues and people of Civil War history. Where I'm Bound offers us insights into the personal struggles and conflicts of the very real people who endured the Civil War. Referring to his characters, Professor Ballard is quoted as saying, "I have done my level best, both as historian and fiction writer, to tell their truths." Where I'm Bound chronicles the adventures of escaped slave Joe Duckett, who becomes a scout for the 3rd U.S. Colored Cavalry in the Northern Army. The book follows Duckett and his fellow black soldiers through vicious skirmishes and battles as they roam the Mississippi Delta, thrilling rescues and escapes, as well as Joe's desperate attempts to determine the fate of his wife and children who remained enslaved on southern plantations. The character of Joe Duckett is actually based on a real black soldier named Alfred Wood, or Old Alf, who was a member of the actual 3rd U.S. Colored Cavalry and was well known for his almost unbelievable daring deeds. As important as Professor Ballard's book is in bringing to life the contributions of black soldiers to the ultimate outcome of the Civil War, it deserves equal praise for giving voice to the truly unheard voices of that period in history, those of the plantation slaves. Professor Ballard tells their tragic and poignant stories magnificently, mostly through the character of Zenobia. Zenobia is Joe's wife. He leaves her behind, along with their infant daughter, Callie, when he joins the Union Army after their two older children, Millie and Luke, were sold to another plantation. Zenobia's story is intertwined with Joe's adventures throughout the book. We follow Zenobia as she suffers the ills of slavery, agonizes over the fate of her separated family, remains faithful to her absent husband, endures countless hardships as she fights for the promise of freedom, and holds on to her dignity, self-respect, and hope for a better life despite unspeakable challenges. One could argue that Where I'm Bound is as much Zenobia's book as it is Joe Duckett's, as much a love story as it is a military history, as much a tribute to the resiliency of the human spirit as it is to the triumphs on the battlefield. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to you novelist Alan Ballard, author of the powerful and gripping Civil War novel, Where I'm Bound.
Wonderful. Good to have everybody here. Thank you so much. What we're going to do is we're going to do what you said. We're going to sing, the choir is going to sing, and then I'll read a little piece, and then they'll sing another song. I'll read a little piece, and then sing another song, and then we'll read a little piece. And then after that, and then if you all want to ask questions, I'll stay here about 20 minutes or so and answer the questions. I'm going to start with Joe Duckett. This is Joe's little scouting trip. Joe is a scout for the 3rd U.S. Colored Cavalry. And this is his first scout. His wife is Zenobia. You know that already. His daughter is Callie. And Joe is all dressed up. Now, he's not in his cavalry uniform anymore now. He's in his looking like a field hand. And he's disguised. And he goes over to Captain Stiles. And Captain Stiles says, he tells Captain Scott Stiles, he says, "The colonel wants me to find where that rebel cavalry is at, sir," which is the southern white cavalry, right? "Where's your weapon, Joe?" Joe smiled. He reached down inside his pants leg. And he took out a 6-shot Colt, polished so brightly it just like it looks like it just came out of the factory. "Son of a gun. Good luck, Joe. See you tomorrow. And don't forget about our race, because we're going to have a horse race." Traveling now in this country, not more than a few hours from his plantation or the old plantation, made Joe sad. Zenobia and Callie were over there somewhere. Oh, what he wouldn't give for just a glimpse of his daughter, see those sparkly black eyes, give Zenobia a pat on her sweet bottom. It was hard being a free man with your family so near, close as your breath, and you couldn't get to him. But he was a soldier man now. He knew where he had to be. Now, about an hour up the road, he came to a path that led down to the river. He guided his horse, Hawk, down the hill to where an old black man sat on a little ferry boat. A rope ran from one side of the river to the other side. "Morning, Uncle," Joe said. "You got a nice little boat there. Makes me a living. Who you be?" Joe pulled out a dollar coin. "You take me across and wait for me. I'll give you two more dollars." The man took the money and he waved Joe on board. "Careful now, careful now. Two horses is as much as this little thing can take." He began to draw the ferry across the river with this rope. "You with them Yankees, ain't you? I's a free man, and we fighting to make you free too. Better watch yourself when you get to the other side. Them gray boys, that's what they call the Southern Confederate cavalry, the Southern Confederates. Better watch yourself when we get to the other side. Them gray boys all around, they catching and killing any colored man they don't know. Say, any lone nigger by himself got to be with the Yankees. They sure gonna wonder where somebody tall and strong as you come from. You look like you've been eating too good." The ferry came to the other bank and it slid to a halt in the mud. Joe rode Hawk onto solid ground and he turned back. He said, "Don't forget to wait for me. I'll say you a little prayer too. Expect you're gonna be needing it, mister." He grinned. "But by the look of you, some of them folks are going to be needing a little prayer, too." Now, Joe rode off into the woods with this old man's warning heavy on his mind. If they caught him, they'd hang him from one of those tall, dark oak trees in the forest that they were riding through. He touched his neck softly with his right hand. Then he reached down in his pants for the flask of bourbon. He took a good long swig. And he wiped his mouth with the cuff of his blue cotton blouse. That felt better. Good thing the captain hadn't asked what else he was carrying besides that revolver. But the captain wasn't out here in these woods. He took another long sip of whiskey, got off of the horse Hawk, and cut him a great big stout club. He might need it if he couldn't get to his gun. Now, squirrels were everywhere, jumping from tree to tree, sometimes stopping to look at him. Wasn't used to having no company in their forest. Now, if Zenobia was here, she'd be teasing him about squirrel stew. Always had fun with him about how much he'd like to eat, and he'd rather eat squirrel than anything. "Zenobia, Zenobia. Come on, man, you're a soldier in the army. You ain't got no time to be thinking about no family. You're getting back to them the best way you know how. Nigga! What you doing out here in the woods on that raggedy-looking horse?" "Stop. Put a little whiskey in your belly, take your mind off your job, and you ride right out into the road, right into a rebel trooper with a gun pointed right at your daydreaming head." Now Joe starts thinking, "Oh, massa, you like to scare this poor nigga to death. I done told Master George, if he put me on a horse to come catch that runaway Amos, then some Yankee soldier's gonna be surely gonna catch me, and he will have done lost himself two niggas instead of one." Now that's just what I told him. "We ain't no Yankees, boy. Whose nigga are you anyway? Now, like I done told you, I belong to Master George. He done sent me after Amos, and if I don't come back soon, he..." "Well, you ain't going back right now. I'm taking you to the colonel." "What for, Master? Just come on up the road with me, boy." Well, when they got to a fork a little ways down the road, Joe saw more rebel cavalry than he ever thought about, much less laid eyes on. Had to be at least four companies of them. And there, riding beside the colonel, was his old massa, Richard Kenworthy, standing up in his stirrups, one hand cupped over his eyes, so he didn't have to squint to see that black man riding alongside his scout. Now, Joe's legs gripped that horse Hawk like he feared he might fall off. And he looked at the scout and he said, "Is that the colonel way over yonder?" Now his right hand closed around this big wooden stick, and he pointed with the other. When the scout turned to look, Joe swung the stick. The blow landed just where the neck meets the shoulder and knocked that red right off of his horse. Now Joe spurred Hawk into a gallop, and they tore down the road. Three rebel troopers right hot behind them. Damn, man, I got me a race today. Joe put his head down alongside Hawk's neck, and he whispered in Hawk's ear. He said, "Don't forget, baby, I know there ain't no horse living that can catch you." Now the rebels were hooping that god-awful yell of theirs, sounding like a pack of hounds. "Gonna hang you when we catch you, nigga," one of them shouted. Joe shouted too, but he didn't shout at the rebs. He said, "Go, Hawk, go." Now, when he took a second to look back, he felt like giving a whooping yell too. They was falling back, couldn't keep up with him, except damn. One of them was still there and gaining. Hawk with his horse was all wet and lathered. Wasn't no way to get more speed out of her. "Come on, baby, down into the woods." He could hear this lone trooper crashing through the woods behind him. "Good, come on into my woods. Come into my woods, Choctaw woods," because he's half Choctaw too. "Choctaw woods, spirits of my ancestors all around me. Big Bear, Little Wolf, come on into my woods." He got down off a Hawk, and he threaded his way through clumps of trees along a path that made all kinds of bends. And just past a real sharp bend, he tied up the horse, pulled out his coat, and waited for the Reb to come around the bend. Now that Reb was only a youngster, but his eyes were mean. Joe shot him in the chest. The Reb's horse bolted away down another path, probably led down to the ferry. Joe jumped on Hawk and followed. "I ain't about to let that other horse get away. It's too fast." They reached the ferry at a full gallop. "Whoa, girl." He jumped down, grabbed the reins of both horses. "Let's get going, Uncle. They right behind me. God have mercy. You can pray while you're pulling on that rope." The old man suddenly didn't seem so old. He pulled like he was 20 years old. And with Joe helping him, the little ferry boat made its way, not so slowly, across the Mississippi. Now halfway across, he heard shots, and he saw the water pinging up way to the right of them. He looked back. Three Rebs stood at the river's edge, blasting away with their shotguns. The old man's hand started shaking something terrible. "They ain't even coming close, Joe, so you keep praying and pulling." Soon as they reached the other bank, he pulled both horses up the hill, tied them to a tree, and he looked around. "Watch them for me," he said to the old man. "I got something I need to do." He spotted an axe propped against the old man's wood supply. He picked it up. He returned to the boat. It took him four blows to split the hull of that boat. He cut the rope, shoved what was left of the boat into the current, watched it list and sink, and with his hands around his mouth, he shouted to the Rebs on the other side, "Any of you gonna cross this river today? It ain't gonna be here." For a moment, the Rebels stopped shooting, and the breeze sent their words clear across the water. "You see how that nigga broke up that boat? Like it was some sheet board. Just like I'd have broke your heads," Joe shouted back, "if them worn out nags of yours could have caught me." Now the rebels commenced to call on him everything except a child of God. And Massa Richard Kenworthy, he stood right up there in the front of them, waving his fist and shouting God knew what. Now Joe couldn't tell what they was yelling, what was all that yelling, but probably that this was the last time in life that Joe would ever cross him. Now the old man was looking his age again, as if he had shriveled up even more. Joe offered him the last of the whiskey, and it was gone in one long gulp. Joe sighed and shook his head. It was going to be a long, dry ride back to the regiment. "Uncle, I sure am sorry I had to sink your boat, but I'll tell my captain how you brought that little bitty boat across the Mississippi with them Rebs firing away at you, and I reckon he'll make it right with you. You going to tell him that, and they might pay me for my boat? I'll do my damnedest to see they does. Now get up on that horse there. She's a good one. We better get out of here fast. It'll go hard with you if they catches you." "You right about that," the old man said with a broad grin. "I'd be a sure enough Union man now." Okay, all right.
Running.
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 My running day.
Running day.
Oh, it will
soon be over.
Running.
Running.
Got to get in a
hurry.
Just gotta make it to the
other side.
Running.
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 My running
day.
Oh,
it will
soon be over.
Running.
Running.
Got to get in a
hurry.
Just
gotta make it to the other side.
Listen, Satan's mad, and I'm so glad.
Just gotta make it to the other side.
Oh, he missed a soul that he thought he had.
Just gotta make it to the other side.
Oh, one thing, children, that I've done wrong.
Just gotta make it to the other side.
Oh, I stayed with Satan much too long.
Just trying to make it to the other side.
Running.
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 My running day.
My running day.
Oh, it will
soon be over.
Running.
Running.
Got to get in a
hurry.
Just
trying to make it to the other side.
Running.
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 My running,
my running
day,
oh, it will
soon be over.
Running.
Running,
got to get in a
hurry,
just
trying to make it to the other side.
Beautiful, Helen. Here I introduce you to Zenobia, but this is Zenobia, and she's now along the Mississippi bank with Ned, who's a little boy, and Helen, who's a little girl, and with Lisa May, and they're all trying to get to a Union gunboat out in the river because they're running away from the plantation. And just one day, while they're waiting there, something happens. They see soon a gunboat comes down, and soon the air is full of smoke and noise. And the gray boys are up in the side of the river, and they're shooting down at this Union gunboat. Boom, 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 right? And the shooting goes on and goes on, and Zenobia finally says, I don't know how we're ever going to get out of here, except one day we're just going to have to take a raft. And when I tell you come running, you got to run, and we got to get out to the raft. So I'm going to tell you, let's read you this little passage here. Two more days pass. Just after daybreak one morning, Zenobia heard the distant rumble of big boat engines coming down the river. She got up off of her pine needle bed and she shook everybody awake. Quick now, down to the raft. Lisa May was up in a minute, but the children were tired. Helen yawned and stretched her arms. Ned started to wipe the sleep out of his eyes. The drone of the engines were getting louder. Zenobia dipped water in a bucket and splashed it in the children's faces. What do you do that for? Ned cried. Boat coming, boat coming, hurry. Helen, who was already on her feet, grabbed her little bag. I'm ready, honey. Zenobia snatched up her own bag. Run, and when we get there, don't bother with the leaves. We're covering the raft. Just get on that raft. The boat engines were loud now. They got to remember, they're Confederates on all sides of the river. Right? Don't worry, let's get it, right? She raced back to the raft. Her stomach felt funny, and they were leaving all her food and all the clothing behind. She pulled the raft out into the river. Lord, it was a big boat. And didn't that red, white, and blue flag snapping in the morning breeze look pretty? You got the white flag ready? Lisa May nodded her head. Then start waving it, Ned and Helen were on their knees, waving their hands. You two lay down before you tip the raft, she said. You'll be safe soon. They got down, but they kept on shouting and waving their hands. Hey, boat, stop for us. Auntie, can't they see us? Zenobia had never seen anything as big as that boat, nor as fast. Why, it was already abreast of them and no more than a field's length away from them. And it was making waves big enough to send the raft sliding up one end of the waves and down the other. Zenobia, now on her knees, had to hold on tight to one of the ropes. She could see soldiers in blue uniforms standing on the decks, and lots of them were colored. Lord, she never thought she'd live to see the day. The river was taking the raft fast downstream and towards the boat. Were those men in that boat blind? How could all those eyes miss a raft with four people on it? Another wave from the boat hit the raft so hard, it almost tossed Zenobia overboard. Watch yourself, Auntie, Helen yelled. You can't swim. Zenobia clung to the rope, her feet dangling in the water. Helen tossed the rope to her, and she pulled herself up towards the center of the raft, just in time to be thrown back into the water by another blow from another wave. One more like that, and that whole raft was gone over. Suddenly, the men on the boat started waving and yelling. Up at the top of the big boat, a man with a white hat on waved too, then turned around and yelled something to some other men in blue. Bells clanged and whistles blew, and a big cloud of smoke belched out of the smokestack. The ship slowed, then the big wheel on it started to turn backwards, and praise the Lord, if it didn't come to a stop, right in the middle of the river. Somebody could sure steer that boat. The waves still rocked the raft, but now it had floated up to the back of the boat. A colored man in a blue uniform yelled down, "Catch this rope when I throw it, and tie it to the raft. We can't stop long, and you can't put a boat down. There are rebs all around." He tossed the rope down. Zenobia reached for it and missed. The man recoiled the rope. "Catch it this time, sister. We can't wait for you." He tossed the rope again. This time, Zenobia kept her eyes right on it. She caught it and tied it between a couple of logs. The deck of the boat was thick with soldiers. "Make sure it's tight. You all lay down now, you all lay down. We're gonna bring you on board a few miles down the river." Ned and Helen waved at the men. Lisa May was crying. "Look sharp now, look sharp. Captain's gonna start the engines." The sailor who had thrown down the rope never took his eye off of them. "You all hang on now, no matter what happens. It's likely to get a mite rough." They all laid down on the raft and they took a hold on that rope on the raft. "Well, we done made it to the boat," Zenobia said. But any relief she felt vanished when the bullets started whizzing over their heads and striking the wooden hull of the boat. One bullet crashed into the side of the raft itself. The rope connecting the raft to the boat got real tight. Then there came a sharp tug on the raft as the engine speeded up. Zenobia felt a sudden surge of power as the paddle wheels took hold. The boat began to move too fast. So much water was coming up over the edge of the raft, it was being pulled under. The whole front part of the raft was submerged, and so was Zenobia's legs. We're going down, hollered Lisa May, trying to scramble to the other side of the raft. "Auntie, save me, Ned was in water up to his chest. Helen had been swept off the raft, was holding on to one of the ropes. Zenobia grabbed Ned and held him close, but she could feel herself slipping off the rope, off the raft. Couldn't hold on. Not fast as that ship was going. "Don't let go of that rope, Helen," Lisa May screamed. "I can't hold on no more." The water was up to her neck. Zenobia said a quick prayer and prepared to die. The whole raft was underwater, covered over by a mass of big white bubbles thrown up by backwash from the prop of the ship. But now she suddenly felt the raft lift itself out of the water, rock a few times, then steady itself, begin to drift. Helen crawled back onto the raft. Lisa May just cried and cried. "We almost made it," she said. Zenobia looked up and she saw a sailor waving a knife in the air. He used it to cut him free from the transport ship. "Thanks, mister." Most of the soldiers who had been waving to them were now busy returning the fire of the rebels. But two or three of the soldiers kept on waving, and one yelled, "We'll be back for you someday." When she looked back,
she saw the raft was floating towards shore. It wasn't long before they were close enough to make out the guns of the white men standing on the shore waiting for them.
When I woke up early this morning, I didn't have no doubt. When I woke up early this morning, I didn't have no doubt. When I woke up early this morning, I didn't have no doubt. Oh Lord,
I didn't have no doubt in my mind.
When I saw that bright sunshine, oh Lord, I didn't have no doubt in my mind.